Welcome to the BioCurious podcast with your host, Kayla Osterhoff. As a health scientist, biohacker, and generally curious person, I'm always looking for new ways to optimize and integrate mind, body, and spiritual health. I created this podcast to explore the magic and science of human biology and expand your consciousness through learning. If you enjoy the episode that you're about to hear, please leave a review and share it with someone who can benefit from the information. Now let's get curious.
Welcome back to the BioCurious podcast. I hope you had a wonderful week and are ready to learn all about posture from Annette, the founder of the Posture Pro method. If you've been wanting to correct your posture and feel more balanced in life, this episode is the one to listen to. Since this was recorded live on the Clubhouse app, there's a live Q&A at the end. If you would like to listen to a live recording, join the Clubhouse community and follow Kayla. As always, don't forget to follow our Instagram, and I hope you enjoy this episode and learn something new.
Annette, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kayla. It's a real pleasure and an honor to explore this social media platform. Very exciting.
Yes. Thank you again for joining. And for those who are not familiar with Annette, she is an internationally known posture expert, therapist, and entrepreneur. And today we are going to discuss the link between posture, health, and performance, and specifically brain health. So before we dive into all of those juicy topics, Annette, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this field of work?
Well, I have a background in rehabilitation. I come from a family of doctors. I remember conversations around the table when I was younger with my uncle and my father, my uncle being a neurosurgeon at the time. And I've always, I guess, intuitively been attracted to anything that has to do with doctor and medical and the brain. And somehow, I guess, my path has led me to being involved in a context of a rehabilitation context that really is different than most accustomed to rehabilitation out there, in the sense that we do work with a method that first and foremost is geared at looking at the body from a brain-based perspective, as opposed to a biomechanical, more local perspective. So my clinic is called Posture Pro. It's located in Montreal, and it really does serve two purposes. It is a clinic where people come and see me to address their chronic issue and their posture, but it also is an institution that teaches this to other healthcare professionals. And it does incorporate the knowledge of neuroscience in a rehabilitation context. And this is something that I've created over time that I've called the Posture Pro method, which basically involves a multifactorial system that involves multiple sensory organs in order to address the problems that we see in clinic, which are usually associated to chronic pain. So in a nutshell, that really is what Posture Pro is. And my the way that I came across this really was just simply trying to deliver better and faster results to my clients, and having the frustration of not being able to resolve the problem in less than two consultations when I was dealing with issues such as lower back pain or shoulder pain or knee pain or hip pain. And everything that was taught to me and everything that was out there at the time, which being in 2006, revolved around looking at the problem locally, but more specifically focusing on muscles and joints. And I found that method and that approach to be very incomplete, in the sense that I knew that the brain is really what controls the muscle and sets the joint position in place, and decided to create the Posture Pro method throughout the course of the years, which is what we now teach and offer in our clinic.
Yeah, that is amazing. And when I came across your profile, I was intrigued and definitely wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about this unique perspective. I have a background in physical therapy and kinesiology, and I can tell you that in the education and even in the practice, in the clinical practice of physical therapy, this perspective is definitely not taught, but I have the same belief as you that it is a kind of a bi-directional feedback loop, rather than going from the body to the brain, or, you know, just one way or the other. I think it's definitely a feedback system between the two. And so the status of the brain will certainly affect the status of the body and the posture and the movement. So I would love to dive into all of that. Before we do, could you just explain, you have a very unique brain-body perspective about posture and how posture is deeply affected by brain development rather than biomechanics itself. So again, going back to that, it's not just a feedback system from the body to the brain. It's almost the opposite, or even a feedback loop system. Can you describe that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. So most disorders or chronic pain issues that we deal with as rehabilitation specialists revolve around the fact that we are taught in school to look at that problem from a local perspective. So an example of this would be, and I'm going to exclude any traumatic events from this example. So somebody just wakes up one day or sneezes, for example, and pulls their back. Most of the treatments that are available to us revolve, or available to our clients or our patients, revolve around treating that problem locally. So you'd go see a therapist that would focus mainly on your back. But when we start looking into the knowledge of neuroscience, what we start to find out is that most disorders, whether they be chronic lower back pain or sciatica or degenerative disc disease or hip pain or knee pain or ankle pain, or even migraines or dizziness, are multifactorial, in the sense that they involve multiple sensory organs. I call them sensory organs because if we look at the parts of the body that send specific information to our brain in order for us to know where our body is in space, there are only very specific sensorial organs that do this. For example, our eyes will allow us to see where we are in space. Our muscles and our joints are going to give proprioceptive feedback to our brain, which is essential for us to know how much tension is actually going on in our body. Our inner ear is going to level our head on our shoulders. The muscles of our neck are connected to our primitive brain, which allows us to know whether or not our head is moving forward or backwards, or if we are falling or losing stability. And our feet are also tell our brain where we are on the ground. I feel that the reason that our rehab system is failing, and I say this because rehab is a $560 billion industry per year that is not decreasing, that is just increasing, is because our medical or even rehabilitation care system has divided up these different organ systems into different specialties. So if we're not addressing the Posture Pro method, then it is then all about looking at looking at the body in a global and holistic way, but more specifically about making links in how each and every one of these sensory organs, feet, eyes, muscles, joints, inner ear, and other components affect how we live out our lives, how we feel, how we interact and process the information that we get from these organs, which ultimately affects the way that we engage with each other. So So yeah, so it really is a method that is based on how we've evolved from being four-legged to upright posture, and then really everything that goes around that. I mean, looking at the primitive brain and how movement patterns develop to begin with, and then these primitive movement patterns that then evolve into postural reflexes and movement patterns as well. All of that needs to happen in a specific stage. So when someone walks into your office and says, I have pain, as a therapist, we are not taught to look at that multifactorial, multisensory system. And I think that, you know, again, that is the missing link in the missing link in the 21st century, and definitely something that has allowed me to be able to address conditions with people, or at least help alleviate symptoms of all of these different problems that are fairly common.
Yes, I love this. And actually, selfishly, I'm going to ask a few questions that could probably help my own health and wellness through addressing posture in a more efficient way. So I have always been told, you know, stand up straight or put your shoulders back. I have this habit of hunching forward. And my thought was that this came from being a tall lady. So growing up and in high school, you know, I'm almost 6 feet tall now. But even at the time, I was a lot taller than a lot of the boys in school, which can be uncomfortable as a teenage girl. And so I would always slump forward and make myself shorter. And now I love my height and I want to stand up tall, but I do have a habit of slumping those shoulders forward and kind of being in a flexed position in my spine. And going back to my time in physical therapy, it was always like, okay, well, strengthen the muscles in the back to pull everything back so that your shoulders can comfortably go into that upright position, and focus on good posture. But what I know as a neuroscientist and looking at how the mind works is the ability to pull your shoulders back and sit upright straight comes from the conscious mind, which when we look into psychology, we know that the conscious mind is only responsible for about 5% of our behavior throughout the day. And it's run based on willpower, and willpower is a very limited resource. So if we can create neural pathways or more permanent ways of changing this behavior, then we can probably have a lot more success in that than just actively thinking like, okay, pull your shoulders back, pull your shoulders back. So I guess my question is, having this posture of kind of slumping forward, what can that tell me about my brain? And what is the more effective way to correct this?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I'm going to answer that with another question, simply to put things in perspective for everyone that's joining us. How long does it take for an animal to walk in comparison to a human? So for example, if we took the example of a giraffe, or how long does it take for the actual a baby to start walking? It takes roughly around 5 minutes. I think that you'll all agree with me that it takes anywhere between 10 months to 12 months for a baby to start walking. And the main difference is in their brain. In other words, we need to learn, or we need to more specifically activate the connections from our muscles to our brain. And that actually happens in stages within the first 12 months of life. And in order for our brain to know when we are in the womb and we are in the process of being prepared for the birthing process, the brain needs to have, our central nervous system needs to have kind of a skew when we are born to know, like kind of like a triggering effect that lets the brain know that the baby is no longer in the womb. And that starts to happen with what we call primitive movement patterns. And there's actually 72 movement patterns that scientists have identified that we will repeat throughout our lives that ultimately allow us to walk in an upright posture, to be able to fight gravity efficiently. But when you think about it, to have an upright posture, we need to connect to the muscles in the back of our body, which are known as our extensors, not our flexors, because when we are born into flexion. This is something, this is the base tone, the base tone of our muscular system is flexion. We must learn to activate our extensors, which allows us as a baby, as of a month and a half to 2 months, to start lifting our head, to eventually lift off our shoulders off the ground, to eventually activate, right, our posterior chain so that we can stand upright and fight gravity. So this entire process really does happen in the first 12 months of life, which we are actually myelinating, creating connections from our muscles to our brain to ultimately reach our entire cortex, which is basically our mature brain. But before that starts to happen, we'll need to go through a certain process, those first 12 months of life, and this will continue to go on up until 6 to 8 years of life. So what we see ultimately in adults that have pain is, can our conscious mind affect this? Can our emotions affect our body 100%? Absolutely. But if we go back to the beginning, which is often what we need to do, we find that some of these movement patterns have not been properly integrated, have not been properly stimulated and then integrated, and that there are connections in the brain that are not yet well formed. And this is when you'll see in clinic someone who has an asymmetry of muscle tone. So for example, someone will tell you, I'm super strong on my right side, my bicep is well developed, but on my left side, I have much less strength. This is a muscle, this is an imbalance in muscle tone. And because tone comes from the brain, that ultimately the origin of the problem starts in the brain. So looking at the brain and restoring those connections is always going to deliver faster results, as far as not having to think about standing upright, because upright posture really is something that is unconscious. So before you can actually start moving, there needs to be a myriad of different things that are happening unconsciously in the background that is telling your brain, okay, now I'm safe to move. I can go ahead, you know, and start to move safely. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So if somebody like me who has this more flexed posture, that is, you know, we've been told a lot that it is not healthy for us. And for me, I do have some issues with my neck, which does is perpetuated by that forward shoulder posture. So where is the place to start to correct that posture?
Well, yeah, definitely habits. You know, if you're constantly bringing your head and your body forward for conscious reasons, because of, you know, you not liking the way that we appear aesthetically, that is obviously a scenario or ergonomics that has to be changed. But where can we start? Well, you have to look at those sensory receptors that are not functioning properly. What are those sensory organs? If we look at the weight-bearing surfaces of someone's feet. So when we look at the foot, at a human foot, and we start to understand that this complex structure, the muscles, the joints, the skin, all of those sensory organs are literally telling my brain how much of my body weight I'm actually distributing on my feet. And that really is an important fact, because it's going to have an effect on the way that I stand. So in other words, the synergy between my flexors and my extensors depends on how my brain feels that I'm actually leveling or distributing my body weight on my feet. And we could break down the foot and talk about it really for hours, but really the take-home message from this is that if you happen to have a mixed foot, which is what I call a mixed foot, which is more of a pronated tendency, that's a movement of the arch going inwards on one side and the movement of the foot going outwards, supinating on the other side. Well, the foot is the first thing that comes in contact with the ground, and that's going to have an effect from the bottom up. It's going to affect your ankle, the mechanics of your ankle, the mechanics of your knee, the mechanics of your hip, and that's going to go all the way up to your head. So 72% of people already have a mixed foot and they don't know it. And this is what I talk about. These are the examples that I give in the TED Talk that I did in 2007. But ultimately, the other extremity of the body is going to be the eyes. And 9 people out of 10 have an eye muscle imbalance. So the muscles of the eyes are not contracting simultaneously and in synchronicity when people try, when we try to look at a target that is far versus close and so on and so forth. So what can we do to address it? Well, it's about neuroplasticity. It's about learning the way, the same way that we learned how to walk and the same way that we adapted in that, I'm going to say, faulty or poor posture, then we're going to need to unlearn those habits and start to move in a different way to start creating new neural networks in our brain that are going to allow us to change our posture. And we do this simply by changing the way that the brain processes sensory information, by looking at the feet, working with foot proprioception, working with eye exercises, along with the different sensory organs that that make us who we are today.
That's fascinating. And so you use learning, which increases neuroplasticity, and doing something new, I'm assuming through repetition, to create new neural pathways, which then end in a difference in behavior, which is the physical manifestation of this. Is that right?
Yeah, that is. And to create neural pathways in our rehab system, there's a gentleman by the name of Malcolm Gladwell who wrote a book and that said that for 10,000 hours of practice, any person can become an international expert at anything. And so an ordinary person who wants to become an international tennis player would be able to do so if they practiced for 10,000 hours, according to his theory. But when you start to look at why that, you know, where his theory is really motivated or generated from, it has to do with the myelination of those neurons, which happens through movement. Now, the problem with our rehab system is if I have practiced for 10,000 hours and I have the posture that I have today, if I injure myself and go in rehabilitation and they work on my muscles for 1 hour, that 1 hour can never overcompensate or be equal to my 10,000 hours of practice. So then the problem becomes, how can we create a system in which we can start to build those 10,000 hours to actually reverse the process? And this is when working with the feet becomes extremely important. Working with the feet, meaning that there's no amount of therapy that could be done on the foot unless you stay in an office for 24 hours a day for a period of, I don't know, of 8 or 10 months, which is almost impossible. So then there has to be some type of stimulation that can be worn in our shoes other than orthotic, to stimulate those sensory receptors that are located in our skin, in our muscles, and in our joints, in our feet. So that would be step one, along with doing some very some precise I call them eye exercises. There's a variety of them that you can do, but the goal ultimately is to create symmetry between the tension of the muscles of your eyes on the left side and on the right side, so that your eyes contract any target evenly at any given distance.
Okay, so in the stimulation in the foot, is that an actual like electrical stimulation or some kind of orthotic that you wear in the shoe that causes you to bring your attention to that area? How does that work?
Yeah. So again, it's not an orthotic. If you look at the way that the nervous system responds, I'm always going to take it back to that because I love to explain why it is that we do what we do. What we're taught in the 21st century is when you put something in your shoes, it has to be an orthotic. But I don't know if there's anyone in here that knows someone that has in the past broken their arm or needed a cast on their body, whether they broke their arm or their leg. Or perhaps you as a child broke your arm or your leg. When you remove that cast, what happens to your muscles? They tend to atrophy and be weak. And the reason behind that is because the brain is no longer sensing that proprioceptive input, that stimulation. The muscle is no longer functioning, so it atrophies. But if we do the same thing under our feet, the same consequences will happen under the arch of our foot. So when we look at neuroscience and we look at what type of information can be picked up from our foot, well, we see that there's these sensory receptors in the skin of the foot, and then there's, you know, receptors in our muscles and in our joints. And we know that if we actually inhibit these receptors, we increase postural sways, which means that we make the person more unstable. Whereas if we optimize the input going into those sensory receptors, we actually decrease postural sways, which translates to wasting less energy and being more stable. So we can do this either through frequency, we can do this either through texture, we can do this through acupuncture points, we can do this through even magnet therapy, but the stimulation has to be constant and it needs to be no thicker than 3 millimeters in height. So if you're going to put an insert in your shoe, anything that is more than three millimeters in height will actually inhibit the information that is going into your brain. Your brain will no longer be picking up this information and will kind of atrophy and flatline at that point as far as the information. But if it's below 3 millimeters, you're actually creating the reverse effect and creating a stimulation for the nervous system.
Interesting. So I guess I would have to see it to fully understand, but I love the concept behind using constant stimulation to really reinforce a new neural pathway once a new behavior has been identified and the new pathway has been introduced in a sense. So I love this and I am excited to learn more about it and dive into it. But I wanted to ask you specifically about what is the importance of movement in both infancy and in childhood that really impact our posture and our brain function, or is it the other way around?
Well, no, it's definitely not the other way around. It does start with infancy, and it goes back to, you know, how long does it take for a baby to walk? The challenge is that when we are born, the only part of our brain that is really fully active, not to say that the rest of our brain is not, but the part that is really, really active is the brainstem, which is kind of the trunk of the brain. And within that part of the brain, in the brainstem, there is a specific area where movement patterns, where these movement patterns will be generated. So it's going to take, there are different stages when a baby, for those of you that have had babies or that have seen babies, you'll notice that, you know, at birth, the baby really can't do much. There are basic reflexes that are happening, which, you know, the baby could basically grasp his hand to hold on to the mother to breastfeed. They have the reflex of sucking and swallowing. And there's different, you know, very primitive basic reflexes that are there for survival. But very quickly, a month and a half into life, the baby now is starting to lift their head up, and they're now able to start, you know, very in a weak fashion, but they're at least able to start lifting their head up. And the moment that this happens, there are connections that are starting to myelinate. They're strengthening connections that are happening between the baby's inner ear, their cerebellum, and different parts of the brain. The cerebellum is the little brain that's located in the back of your head. And that cerebellum, the minute that it starts to get activated, it starts to dispatch information to the rest of the entire brain. What's really interesting is when you look at a baby's brain at birth, the part of the brain that allows us to feel, which is the sensory cortex, is the part of the brain that's going to pick up all of that sensory information. But right in front of that sensory cortex, you have the motor cortex. And the motor cortex, and in front of that, the frontal lobe, they don't exist in a baby yet. Those parts of the brain are there to receive the myelination, but the formation of the motor cortex and the frontal lobe is not yet existent. What is going to stimulate and grow those brain parts is the stimulation that we receive from our sensory cortex. So that's like, for me, when I realized that, I was like, wow, that the human body really is amazing in the way that it develops. And it's going to happen in the first 12 months of life. And this is what we teach, the step-by-step, what types of movements to start looking for at different stages, because, you know, you have to learn to, before you learn how to walk, you have to learn how to crawl. And crawling is either going to happen homolaterally, ipsilaterally, contralaterally, and all of those movements are associated to specific brain parts, brain areas that are starting to develop and be stimulated and myelinated and mature. Along the moment while this is happening, There's also the formation of our vagal system, our sympathetic and parasympathetic system that is going to fuse and regulate our digestive mechanisms and our ability to calm ourselves and digest food and so on and so forth. So all of that is really linked and intertwined together. And it also plays a role with our emotional and limbic system. So all of those components form our brain. This is why I completely agree with you when we say that our emotions and the way that we feel can definitely affect our posture and our mood. Yes, it's true. But then if you start changing someone's posture, you can also have an effect, a positive effect on their mood and the way that they see the world and the way that they see themselves as well.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that this would be something that every parent should be educated in, because I think you could catch some of these movements to really understand how your child's brain is developing and also how to help them to develop maybe faster or more efficiently certain areas of the brain. So that is fascinating, and I think we could probably talk about just that all day long. But I was curious if the listeners who are tuning into this conversation have maybe some postural things that they're aware of that they want to improve, or if they want to use their posture to improve either their brain health or their fitness, is there anything simple that they could try at home that would work right away?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I always tell people to do is to identify the area of the problem. So, for example, someone who has shoulder problems or has pain when they lift their arm up, making sure to lock their elbow and, you know, restrict movement of the other body parts. But when you go into full flexion, if there is elbow pain or even lower back pain, is to test that beforehand. And one of the things that I think should be done by everyone, regardless of pain or not, are eye exercises, because vision affects 100% of our brain. And if our eyes are not tracking our environment, if I'm not seeing the same thing from my left eye in comparison to my right, my brain knows this. You might not be aware of it consciously, but your brain is aware of it, and it's creating a cascade or a myriad of different symptoms that you may not have made the connections with. So doing eye exercises as part of your healthy working out or healthy routine for me is something that should be done every single day. And there's different exercises that can involve just a movement of the eyes. There's other movements that can go from either left to right or up and down, or they can also be done in conjunction with the movement of the head and the eyes by looking at a specific target. But the easiest one really is the one that I showed on my TED Talk, which consists of simple circular motions in front of your face to kind of get, you know, both eyes to work in synchronicity. And just from doing that, if you compare the before and after, whether it be in shoulder flexion or, you know, in lower back pain or knee flexion or whatnot, and compare your level of pain, very often we'll have people say to us, why I feel a difference, or that improved, or I have a little bit less pain. So that is one thing that could definitely be done on a daily basis. It's going to cost you 30 seconds out of your day. And I suggest doing it anywhere between, you know, 2 to 3 times a day at the least, and see how you feel. And I'll just add to that some of the symptoms that are associated to the organ of the eye, that sensory receptor, which is the eye, is going to be tiredness throughout the second part of the day specifically. So someone that says to you, you know, by 2 o'clock or 3 p.m., I'm pooped, I'm wiped, I need a coffee, or I need to eat some sugar to boost me up. That is the expression of the eyes that are overcompensating all day long. And the expression of that reality is felt in the body and is represented as I'm pooped. So trying those eye exercises could definitely, it's kind of like yoga for the eyes.
I love that. And it sounds pretty simple and something that folks could do, maybe just even sitting in front of their computer during a quick break from work. Is there a place where people can find examples of these eye exercises on Instagram or YouTube or someplace like that?
Yeah, so on my Instagram channel, on my IG channel on Instagram, I posted a couple of weeks ago a actual video of how to do this. It's a 1.5-minute guidance video with a model that's performing the exercise. So just hover over to Posture Pro on at Posture Pro on Instagram. And if you want to see a more detailed version of it, along with postural corrections, then I would certainly suggest looking at my TED Talk, which you'll be able to find simply by putting my full name in Google along with TEDx, and then you'll be able to see that video around the 10 minute mark, I think.
Awesome. Well, thank you for offering those free resources. I'm definitely going to check it out and see if I can start to improve some of the things that I'm working on with my posture, and then also improving my brain health. So I'm definitely excited about that. There are a couple of questions that I would love to ask all of my podcast guests, if you are up for it, before we open up to the live Q&A.
Sure.
Awesome. Starting with my first question, do you have a specific morning routine that sets you up for success for the day? And if so, what does that entail?
Taking time for myself and focusing on positive things of the day before and positive things of the day to come today. I tend to have a brain that I tend to think about a lot of things at the same time, and to be able to calm my brain down early in the morning and just organizing my thought process for the day to come. But at the same time, I find that focusing on that positive energy and that gratefulness, you know, because we tend to be, I tend anyways to be less in the moment because I'm all over the place. So that will be definitely being grateful for yesterday and the things to come today. My day starts around 4:30 and 5 a.m. So I do have a lot of time. I mean, I have a good 30 minutes to do that. And it does involve, you know, some breathing and 10-minute focusing meditation. I try to do this at least 5 times, 5 days out of 7, if I can, along with my quick workout that includes cardio and weights, 45 minutes tops, you know, both cardio and weights has to be done within that time frame. And I try typically to do all of that before 7:30 or 8 a.m.
Awesome. I mean, those are some of the same components for most high performers, is gratitude and some sort of movement and time to yourself. So I love that. My next question is sometimes a little bit of a hard one. So if you need a moment to think, go ahead. But if you could provide the listeners with just one simple piece of advice that would help them to improve their overall health, what would you recommend?
Managing your stress and finding a way to be able to identify what is stressful in your life. And that could be with your environment, with the people that are in your environment. But what I found to work best for me was to surround myself with like-minded people. I mean, we all learn from our mistakes. It took me a while, I feel, to kind of get that for me. And you know, having those people, those very few people in your life that understand who you are and what your mission is. And I would say that, you know, lifting each other up at seeing each other's progress and lifting each other up as far as the goals that we are achieving for ourselves is something that is extremely important, was important for me and my process and like-minded people. Also, if there's an emotion that is just, I always try to identify the emotion behind any reaction that I may have to something. That just helps me better understand myself and cope with myself and my emotions. But I'll say this, the number one thing that I think should be done, or to achieve this better, I should say, is to address your own posture. Because if your posture is unstable, you are in a constant state of stress. Although you may do meditation, eat right, and work out, you know, and try to have a healthy lifestyle, being unbalanced does create oxidative stress in the body. It does create constant inflammation. And this is when, you know, we may feel that we're doing everything that we're supposed to do and we're still not there yet. Looking at your posture might be the missing link as well.
Mm. Thank you so much. And I couldn't agree with you more on those points. I find a lot of value in what you shared today. And so I would love to move to the audience for a couple of questions. So we will start with Oksana. Welcome up to the stage.
Hi, Kyla, Annette. Thank you so much. Annette, I realized I saw your TED Talk and it made a huge difference in the way I view the whole postural alignment theme. So my question is sort of, I have two questions. So the first one is, I'm a person who lived my whole life with scoliosis. Is it possible to cure it completely? And if it's possible, what can you suggest to do? And the second question is about my 12-year-old. So he is on Zoom most of the time. Then he also plays hockey. So what happened with his posture, one side of his body is lifted now, and the other one is kind of like, his left shoulder is lower than his right one. And we realized it's almost like the muscle memory from hockey that amplified by this 6 hour, 7 hours sitting in front of the computer. And we, you know, trying to address this and do some, again, body work, postural alignment things. But what are some things that you think are important for this younger generations who are sitting in front of their computers most of their time?
Yeah, no, thanks, Oksana. Thank you so much. So I'm visualizing when I'm looking at him from the front, you may have the impression that one shoulder is lower than the other and one hip is either higher than the other. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what we refer to as an imbalance in the frontal plane, whereas the muscles on the left side of our body in comparison to the right side, some appear to be tighter on that side and the other side appears to be longer. That's a muscle imbalance. And that muscle imbalance comes from the brain. When we look at the brain, there's two sides of the brain. There's the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. And each lobe is meant to control our limbs, our distal limbs, which means our arms, the ones that we can move contralaterally. So the right side of your brain will control the left side of your body and vice versa. But we also have different motor tracts that does affect the muscles that are located much closer to our spinal column. So what I would say to that is that it's always going to be the same process when we look at someone that has, regardless of their age, when we're looking at a human that, someone that has a nervous system, you have to look at the way that they started to move in the first stages of their lives. So were they born naturally? Was there a C-section? How old were they when they walked? Did they have any orthotics? Did they wear any braces? How much time do they spend in front of the computer? Because when did they start picking up a computer, at what age? All of that is going to affect the way that they develop their muscular system. So the process is really simple: identifying which movement patterns are not or are still active, working on these movement patterns, addressing the foot if there is an imbalance, looking at the way that the eyes are tracking. And I would say the third component will be the jaw, because if all of the above did not happen in that specific sequence, then it's going to also affect the development of his jaw. His lower jaw on the upper jaw can also challenge his center of gravity as far as his shoulder posture. So, having his posture addressed would be my first suggestion. And, we offer online consultations, but we also have practitioners that are located throughout the world. If you go on our website, find a practitioner, you can find someone that is near you. Now, for your first question, as far as scoliosis, one of the things that I would love for the auditors to listen to is always ask yourself whether it is a cause or a symptom. And we know from studies done in medical studies and neuroscience that scoliosis is not hereditary. There is no gene for scoliosis. We know that if the scoliosis develops before puberty, it may be more likely than not an aggressive scoliosis, and it's more likely with women than it would be with men. So what we see is also that it evolves anywhere between 0.5 to 2 degrees per year. With scoliosis, what I've noticed clinically is that they're always, most likely, there is an imbalance with the feet. The eyes are not tracking properly, but there's also an imbalance with the teeth and the TMJ. And I'll take it a step further. I've also noticed the clinically, one of the things that I did notice is that there is the emotion of abandonment in the early stages, in the first 6 years or 8 years of life, that is present with the ones who have a scoliosis. So my suggestion will be the same as your son, is figuring out how far back that emotion goes, if it's there, dealing with it and resolving it, and along with addressing your foot posture, your eye movements, and looking at any TMJ issues, or definitely tongue position.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Oksana. Next up, we have Nona May. I hope I said that right.
Very close. It's Nona May. Thank you for having me up. My question, one, was I was looking for where the resource was to find the eye movements. I was really interested in that, just because I'm on a computer mostly all day, and I am looking for specifically for eye movement exercises. So that's the first one, which is really short. But the second one has to do more with my mother had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and then while she was in ICU 3 days later, she had a stroke. And she has something that is a milder form of global aphasia. It was really severe at first because it hit her communication center. So she has difficulty in understanding everything clearly all of the time. I know that they say after a couple of years, if it hasn't, you know, wherever she's at, I've been told by several doctors that's where she's going to be. There isn't going to be anything for improvement. I'm constantly looking for things that I can try to teach her to help her implement simple things that might be able to help her brain health, or help her with her condition. And I'm wondering if there's anything with regard to posture, the eye movements, things like that, that you would recommend.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for sharing. I'm sorry to hear about your mom. You know, if you go on our website, posturepro.co/science, we have some published studies there that we associate to the foot, to the TMJ, to the eyes, and there are many, many more. If you'd like to have more, if we don't have what you're looking for, don't hesitate to send us a message. You can do so through Facebook Messenger or through Instagram, or even send us an email at education@posturepro.co. We'll be more than happy to share that information with you. Here's the thing is, with anything that affects the brain, whether it be a stroke or global aphasia, there's always going to be, I mean, the results that we can expect to get through the Posture Pro method, which involves the stimulation of those multi-sensory organs, will be limited in the results. Everybody's brain is different. Everybody's nervous system is different. But when there's something that affects the nervous system, one of the things that's always going to resonate from that is in the way that the eyes are actually moving. So do I think that the eye exercises can help? Yes, absolutely, up to a certain extent, keeping in mind that if there is an issue with that specific part of the brain, it may take a little bit longer, or you may have to do them a little bit more often in order to see some of the desired results. I can tell you that clinically, I work with clients that have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, stage 4, cancer, or different types of neurological disorders, and all have reported having an alleviation up to a certain extent, or different degree of alleviation according to their own specific medical condition. So it doesn't hurt to try, is what I'll say. And I would maybe also recommend looking at all of the possibilities that are available to you as far as optimizing that sensory input to the brain. Now, for the eye exercises, if you go on to my Instagram channel, I believe that there is an area there where you can click on the icon of the IGTV, and the title is How to Perform Eye Exercises. analyzes, I believe it's either the fourth or the fifth or sixth video from the top down, which will show you exactly how to do those eye exercises with her. So be patient, take your time, and certainly give her positive feedback as she's doing those exercises. Well, you know, I mean, I see the eye exercises and keeping your posture. You know what it is? The challenge is fighting gravity. That's what we're all put under. So the less amount of energy you spend or you waste standing upright, the more energy you have available to your own internal organs and your own system. And I think that, you know, that's a good thing, because I mean, when we train and we try to eat right, that's exactly, we're trying to reverse the process of aging as best as we can. And I find that, you know, fighting gravity efficiently and preserving our energy and using it in an efficient manner is part of being healthy.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all the resources.
Thank you so much for your question. And I just want to add from a neuroscience perspective that the best way to prevent neurodegeneration, or at least to slow that process in general for anyone, including those already who are having some symptoms of Alzheimer's or some kind of neurodegeneration, is learning and practicing new things, because that not only sparks neuroplasticity, but it does help to generate new neural pathways. And so essentially changing the shape of your brain, meaning optimizing the function of it. And so I'm always a proponent of learning and trying new things. My mother also suffered from a stroke several years ago, and in her willingness to try new things, she has really been able to improve her brain health and function and memory and cognition, as well as, you know, her motor functions as well. So I would always be a fan of that. And, you know, brain training or brain games, anything like that can really be a powerful way to do this. And it really just takes a willingness and a bravery to try something new that's uncomfortable. So I hope that helps as well. And thank you, Annette, for answering these questions for our audience. If the listeners are interested in connecting with you further, or if they are interested in finding some of the resources that you have out on the web, where is the best place for them to connect with you?
So our website is posturepro.co, and our social media tag is @posturepro, except for Twitter, which is posture_pro. So you can find us on any social media platform, and now on Clubhouse.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on Clubhouse and recording this live episode of the BioCurious podcast. And thank you for all of the listeners who stuck in there with us for this hour. It was a very fun conversation, and we will catch you on the podcast platforms.
Thank you so much, Kayla, for having me. It was a pleasure.
I hope you liked this week's episode of the BioCurious podcast. If you enjoy listening and learn something, please leave us a review and share it with someone that could benefit. If you don't already, follow our Instagram @BioCuriousPodcast for teasers of new episodes, advice from old guests, biohacking quizzes, and if you tag this account with a screenshot of the episode, we will feature you on our story. Thank you for all the support, and have a good day.